Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Ray.
I'm Alex Reed.
Okay, well, welcome back to another episode of
No Sleeping.
Another episode of Mostly Lit.
Welcome back to another week. How's everybody doing?
Everybody, you know.
I mean, people that are listening, how's everybody doing?
Hey guys, how are you doing?
How
are
you doing,
guys? How are you doing? I'm good. I've just been telling Alex that I had bubble tea today. And obviously bubble tea has milk in it. And you know, I don't drink milk. Mm-hmm. It's been like nearly 2 decades. I was forced to drink milk. That was the thing. It was a very traumatic moment.
I don't know how you were forced to drink milk. You don't drink milk.
No, when I was younger.
Oh, you're forced to drink milk as you grew up.
Yeah. So you saw, you know, you grow bones, have warm milk before bed. It was literally, I felt like I was being tortured. Okay. This was proper Guantanamo Bay style torture for me. Because one, warm milk is like the devil's like condiment.
Condiment.
Yeah. This is what the devil puts on his like fish stew is mm-hmm. warm milk.
Oh God.
Yeah.
Warm milk and cookies. When I used to drink milk, I
don't
drink milk
anymore. Oh my God, that is disgusting.
Warm milk and cookies.
I don't understand how people dunk anything in milk.
You know what? It's all about...
You're a dunker.
No, I'm a bite and then drink.
Oh, okay, good.
And then have it all swirling. Oh, yeah. But I have like oat milk now and oat milk is great. Shout out to the lactose intolerance family.
I feel like I'm there now because I fully had bubble tea and now when I tell you guys, I feel disgusting.
Yeah.
I feel nauseous. I have a headache. My stomach is doing bang, bang,
bang. Bang, bang, all right.
Bang, bang.
Let's get into the bits.
Oh, we didn't talk about how you do it. What did you do this week?
I mean, my week, you know, nothing.
Really?
Nothing.
What? That's a lie.
I mean, there isn't anything to report.
Really? Wow, crickets.
This week, I'm looking into the sky.
You know, Alex is like booked and busy, guys.
I'm busy. I'm not even booked. Can you book me, please?
How could you say I'm busy, but I'm not booked? Me, I'm booked. I'm just not busy.
This is what I'm saying. Like, I'm actually just like, no, I don't. But freelancing is a journey. It is doing the most in my life right about now. I am... sleeping.
You're sleeping.
I'm having good sleeps. I'm drinking a lot of water.
Fantastic.
Barring today. I don't know what that was.
First of all, I was drinking Lucozade.
That's the first time I've had Lucozade / any kind of like sugary drink in a long time.
Oh, you said you were doing that something clean 30 thing?
The whole 30. But ever since then, I ended at the end of June.
Yeah.
But I haven't really drunk sugary drinks since. So I've just been drinking like either coffee or water. And every so often, if I feel like I have really watered down orange juice, because I don't like all the sugar in it. But yeah, I'm doing okay. I'm just getting on. I'm doing what I have to do to survive in
books
this London.
Books and busy. Hot boy summer.
Go through hot boy summer. Oh yeah.
There we go. This is what I was waiting for.
Now, I went to the house festival. Shout out to Sir House and all the people that are involved in that.
So, guys,
situation.
Here I was at work and I'm just seeing like snaps, and I was like, wow. It was interesting.
Shout out to Abe, our playwright friend.
I love Abe. By the way, he's got a play that comes out. I think it's maybe, is it June?
Mm-hmm.
June. It's July. Sorry. July. And we're really excited because we're going to go. I think we're booked for like the last day because there's going to be a nice party. Mm-hmm. Really excited. If you want to see it, go and see this bloody play. I know it's going to be amazing. I love Abe. I think like there's, you know, when you meet people who don't have that crab mentality, mm-hmm. that I have to make sure that everybody is beneath me for me to like shine. Mm-hmm. He's just somebody who just like always wants to bring people on.
Yeah.
And so, like, he's helped me so much just in terms of like motivation and getting me to write more. He's absolutely phenomenal.
Just an amazing guy. Yeah. So Abe's got a play out called All the Shit I Can't Say to My Dad. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you can go out and get tickets at the www.bunkertheatre.com and you can have a look for the play. There's loads of dates happening across August. And stuff. Yeah, so go for it. Have a look. He's an amazing writer. He's written so many plays and he's on his way to do amazing things.
I'm so excited because the day of his play is my first day after my training contract ends.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna be so amazingly unemployed. Oh, I'm so excited because guys, this journey of 2 years doing this law thing has been difficult and hard, but really rewarding.
Yeah.
And I'm excited for the next cycle. Also, guys, I'm doing Hot Girl Summer because your girl has been in the gym.
Yeah.
She's been putting in that work.
But yeah.
And it's so weird because I thought that like when I started gymming in Jan, I was like, oh, you know, it probably won't last anyway. But the fact that it's July and I'm in the gym.
Yeah.
Like it's become a hobby and a habit. And I'm like, who is this girl? Like I eat salads. I'm considering going vegan.
So are we done not speaking about you?
No, not done.
Okay, continue.
We just finished you.
No, we didn't.
Yes, we did. We finished you.
All right, let's go back. So.
Yeah, Abe's amazing.
Congratulations, Abe. Go back to doing this. I was at the house festival. It was amazing. Yeah, amazing time.
I'm annoyed. I didn't want you to talk about that because I didn't go.
Loads of stuff happening. As you said, it's Hot Boy Summer. Everybody is sorting themselves out. Shout out to Megan Thee Stallion. The Stallion is legit my favorite person this summer.
Yeah.
Ray Ray Snatch doing whatever she's doing.
Wow.
Okay, so let's get into Mostly Lit. What are you reading?
So I am finally reading That Thing Around Your Neck by Chimamanda Ngozi.
Yeah, I haven't read it yet. Adichie.
I haven't. And I've started it. Obviously, it's a collation of a few essays. And you know what? I've already been pulled in because as far as I'm concerned, Chimamanda just writes beautifully. I think what she does is she captures a people, mm-hmm. And she captures a time and she captures an environment so wonderfully. I mean, my favorite will always be Half of a Yellow Sun. I don't mess with Americana like that, but you know, it's a great story and it really, what I liked about Americana is it talks about the identity of the diasporic person when they move back to quote unquote home, mm-hmm. and how that relationship is. That is the one thing I loved about that book is it touches on what happens when you move from your like country of origin to another country. How are you treated there? But at the same time, how are you treated when you come back home? And I think that isn't touched on a lot. In like when we talk about diaspora narratives. That's one thing I liked about it. I did not like the love story because, you know, there was a cheating scandal and you know how I feel about that. Like, I'm just...
I'm not ready yet.
Makes me sick. I'm just a bit like, you're a coward and I'm not about you, ceiling. But yeah, so I'm reading that and I'm super, super excited to finish it so I can finally say, yeah, I've read all of Charmander's works, you know. What are you reading?
I'm reading several books, but so I'm reading Sapiens by Yuval Noah.
Really?
Noah Harari. Yeah, I've got that on the audiobook.
Yeah.
And it is fantastic. Like, he is an amazing voice at the moment for me at this stage. Just trying to really understand, like, the elements of humanity and the human experience and kind of the way he breaks down how things occurred. And, like, you know, there's different levels. There are different types of humans.
Mm-hmm.
Homo sapien, and then there's the Neanderthal and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And you're basically just kind of, there was a question in there that was like, there were like, at one point, there were three different kinds of human on the planet. And he's like, if one human race, which was like the Homo sapien, for example, didn't kind of like clean out the other one, what would that have looked like today if there were several Homo
that would have been like, so interesting
human beings, you know what I mean? So it'd have been really weird. And but also, yeah, he's like, you know, he has this thing about humans creating fictions for themselves, and obviously the idea of beliefs, and you know, he's like, if there's the idea of being, you know, as if you're quote unquote caveman or a Neanderthal and stuff, and you're frightened of lions and all that stuff. And there's this whole weird thing about these whole fictions that you create for yourself, saying that the lions is the god of the jungle and all this stuff, and that, like, you fear the lion and all this, and the fire and all that stuff. And it's just creating stories around things to kind of make the realities better.
Yeah.
Which then kind of strips back humanity to the point where you're like, is anything created like that even necessary for us to survive?
Yeah.
You know? And it's just really weird. It's just the way he kind of talks about it. So that's that. I'm reading that. I'm also reading Dolly Alderton's Everything I Know About Love.
Yeah.
And that is an eye-opener.
Yeah.
Because it's a look into a life that I will never, ever experience.
What
because,
do you mean?
Give the synopsis. You know, just, like, so basically, Dolly Alderton is a Sunday Times columnist.
Yeah. She's also a podcaster.
She does the High Low podcast.
Yeah.
And she's a journalist. Yeah, gorgeous. And, well, like, it's so funny because we grew up in pretty much the same area, similar areas of London.
Really?
But obviously,
London crew.
No, like north, yeah, west, north kind of side.
Yeah.
And, but she also had a completely different experience growing up, you know what I'm saying? Because obviously when you look at kind of the area that I grew up in versus the kind of area that she grew up in, the kind of growing up and then edging over towards, you know, like she was kind of veering towards Uni of Bristol, but then she went to Exeter. It was kind of the whole, this is to start, and she had friends that, I want to study classics. And I grew up thinking, like, the people that went to uni in my year, like, we didn't even know what classics was, sort of thing. You know what I mean? We didn't even know that was an option.
Right, exactly. Study. Yeah. I think I would have loved doing classics.
I think it would have been great. But then obviously I think of, like, J.K. Rowling went and studied classics at Exeter and all that stuff. And then it's like, it's just really interesting to think to yourself, like, as a middle-class white woman, like, what that looks like, what your life looks like growing up. Yeah. It was a very interesting perspective just to see, sort of thing. But there's a really funny story about her relationship with alcohol that I found hilarious.
What? Do you want to share?
But, like, she was really drunk one day, and like with her friends and whatnot. And, like, she convinced herself that instead of going to Oxford Circus, she was on the bus that she was on was a coach, and it was going to Oxford City Centre.
Right.
And she kind of, like, made it in her mind that she was going to Oxford. So she managed to get into a cab that somehow, and she called her friends that were in Oxford. She's like, oh, we're coming up to Oxford. We're coming, you know, what, like, we want to have a night out. She wasn't even in the thing. And then she called her friend who was in Leamington Spa and said, oh, I want to come up to Leamington Spa. Is there something that we can do?
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, come up. And then was like, all right, I'm going to get in a taxi and we're going to come. And she went to the taxi place and she's like, look, I want to go to Leamington Spa tonight. And it has to be under has to be around £100. That's what I have on me.
Yeah.
And he was like, the taxi driver was like, well, it's going to be around 200 quid because you want to go to Leamington Spa at 3 a.m. in the morning on a whatever night. And she's like, oh, okay, cool. And then her friend like said, oh, you'll pay the other half of it.
So she went.
But like, it was so funny because she was like, I started sobering up on the M1. and I was like, wow, like, that's crazy. So she got to, she went all the way to Leamington Spa and she crashed out and she was there. But then, the serious part of the story though is like her friend who she had left in London.
Yeah. Oh God.
Was like,
that would have been me. I'd be like, sorry, bye, girl. Yeah.
But she was like, I'm in Leamington Spa. And she's like, why? And all this stuff. But then she was like, all right, I'll pay for your coach ticket to come down. And then she was like, oh, are you disappointed with me? Are you angry with me? And she was on her way back. She's like, I'm not angry with you. I'm concerned because for you to get so drunk that you think that you're going to Oxford City Centre when you're outside Oxford Street at Topshop and you took yourself all the way out of the city
just because
you're drunk. That's a conversation that needs to be had because that's you're putting yourself at risk.
Yeah,
completely. So that was a really interesting story because she was really charting her kind of like experience of alcohol and like the limits that you go through in your 20s. Like sometimes you push it to see what you're capable of, limitations are.
Yeah.
Who's around you? And a lot of people, they're not lucky enough to be able to say that, oh, they've done it. And they've gone to Leamington Spa to see their friend and they're okay, or they've passed out in front of their family. Or they, you know what I mean? They're not lucky enough to do that. They're lucky, sometimes they get lost or harmed or whatever.
But even just not, I also think that not having the luxury of that choice and knowing that you'll be safe and knowing that you can push those limits. Like personally for me, I think when I was younger, I never pushed limits. I always stayed within my very complete parameters. This is the type of woman that I should be. This is the type of young girl that I should be. This is the rule. These are the rules I should follow. And I think growing up, the one thing that has really made me understand who I am is disregarding the parameters that other people have put around me and actually saying, why do I believe what I believe? And who am I if not, like, I believe that you are a culmination of your choices and you are a culmination of your thoughts. And so if my choices are not my own, who the hell am I really, but just a clone of what somebody else would want of me to be? And I think when I started growing up, which by the way was just like 25, that's when I was like, oh, so this is Raifa. I think it was because I started making choices that were solely my own.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time you begin making choices that are your own, girl, you're gonna get it wrong. You're just gonna make all the wrong choices.
Yeah.
But then you push back and you go too far and then you push yourself back a bit into a place that you're more comfortable. But it's wonderful because it's your choices and like they're your parameters. And then you're just like, actually, this is how far I'll go. This is how comfortable I am. And you're not gonna push me to that level because I know what it feels like to be there because I've done it and I don't like it.
Yeah.
Or I'm comfortable here because I've chosen to be here.
Yep.
So in a way, I think her making those decisions or just having the luxury of making that decision is very privileged and very nice.
It is, and it's just really wonderful. It's a really interesting story because it's a really interesting set of like just anecdotes and stuff that she's kind of like created. So yeah, if you guys are interested in reading those, just go and have a listen/read/look or whatever and let us know what you think on that.
Read that, Chimamanda.
Mostly news. There are two things I just kind of wanted to raise.
What you got for us?
Pardon. So I was reading the Times today.
Yeah, you proper like read like paper newspaper. Yeah, like Alex is so cute and old school. I love it. Me, I just have them subscriptions.
Yeah, I mean, I've got subscriptions. Yeah. Not subscriptions, but I have a newsfeed.
Anyway, yeah.
So it kind of caught my mind, but this guy called Rob Sharp in the Times today, he wrote a piece that he said he created a men's book club and it cured him of his loneliness. And I found that really interesting because obviously it's a really weird kind of like privileged stuff. I mean, look at that.
Wow.
But But like, he basically wanted to, he created this kind of group of men, and they meet up in his house, and he has a conversation with them, and they talk about certain books and whatnot. And from what I read from like the first part, it's quite high.
High culture. High, right? Oh, okay, yeah.
As in like the level of conversation and the intellect is quite high. And I don't know how accessible it is to a lot of people, but he really benefited from having a group of people around him that were able to read those kind of texts with him and kind of get him out of that funk of loneliness. And it kind of made me think about just groups of friends and kind of having the people around you that you kind of help you kind of get out of those spaces of loneliness. And like, we go through so much in life that if we don't actually learn to build community, we are going to be quite lonely, and like your community can only go so far when it's behind a screen.
This is it.
And then people are like, you know, there's this whole question about, you know, building a tribe, finding your tribe, getting your tribe to follow you and all this stuff. And it's just like, yeah, but who's going to be the people that are going to come and like sit there?
Who are you calling at 3 a.m.?
Yeah, you're going to be calling at 3 a.m. Who's going to sit there and commune with you and have this kind of conversations with you about things? Like, so I mean, he created the space to, you know, connect over books. I mean, there is statistically shown that reading makes you more empathetic, it makes you more sensitive and all sorts. But you know, to have those, they have that level of vulnerability with like a group of like men in general, and talking to them about topics that arise within it, and then expanding on those topics amongst one another, I think that's a very important thing.
I think it's wonderful. Like, I've always wanted to provide that space, and every time I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna do it, but then I'm always worried, like, oh god, people won't come. Like, I would love to have an intimate book club where like people just come around
you start it and they will come. Like, I mean,
I've always wanted to do it.
A biblical proverb, it was like, when one or more gather in his name, as in God's name, it is a, you know, is a communion.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? So like,
I think I will. Like a nice intimate book club where it's just a few people have a few drinks and a cheese board. I know you love a cheese board, Alex.
Can't eat no dairy, but I'll be there with the grapes.
Oh, I'll be there with my camembert. Oh, yes.
I'll be there struggling with like my bones.
Yeah. No, I definitely think I'm going to do it, but because it's something that I've always wanted to do.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like, you know, like dinner parties, but I don't cook, so I'm not going to do that. Maybe I'll just do book, like, just, you know, come around and have dessert and discuss about books and culture. That sounds really fun.
I think that's and it's important. So you know, we need to keep book clubs alive. Those need to kind of keep happening. I think a lot of people are searching for more
connection. Also just community. Like, we don't like, I mean, we have a group of friends that meet up quite regularly, I would say.
Yeah.
And I have like groups of friends, and we always like meet up every once in a while.
Yeah.
But I literally can't imagine not having that.
Yeah.
Like, can you imagine, like,
absolutely,
it's just like online presence. Sometimes like you need people, you know, and just walking around not having that community. Because in Zanzibar, like, I would say there is that community, like your neighbours, you all know each other. But here, believe, I don't even know my neighbours. I'm certain one of my neighbours left now. I don't know when. But having,
I do feel like that's a London thing as well.
Yeah, but, I know, man.
Anyway, so that's that. If you guys want to, I will put the link in the bio.
If you're interested in coming to my, actually, no, sorry, I don't know you from Adam, so you won't step into my house.
I will put the link in the episode description, and you guys can have a read of that. But also, The Telegraph.
Everything. Now, you made me feel so uncultured, because all I read is the FT.
This is your own issue.
You didn't want to see my FT feed. I was like, all right, cool, we're good.
I can't actually help you with that situation. the GCSE exam board, a GCSE exam board, EdExcel.
Oh, God, I hate them, man.
Adds more ethnically diverse texts after complaints of too many dead white men. So,
wait, is this the article? Is this the article headline? Dead white men?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Dead white men. So quote unquote.
Quote unquote dead white men. So phenomenal.
Basically, EdExcel has announced on Monday last week, when this comes out, that from September this September coming, schools will be offered more poems, plays and novels to choose from, including those written by authors from Black, Asian and minority ethnic backgrounds.
Yeah.
It's after a call to decolonize the curriculum, having gaining pace at universities where students have urged faculties to update reading lists. The move by Pearson, which houses EdXL,
yeah,
is one of the first indicators that the movement is now gaining momentum in schools too. So we're going to be seeing
Benjamin Zephaniah, Madeleine Blackman, those
are the people that are going to be
really in
it. We're going to be seeing like Guyanese authors.
I want to see some East African authors.
We're going to be seeing some Pakistani-born authors, Indian authors. So yeah, I just think this is a great piece.
Mallory.
Yeah, I just think this is a great piece. It's a great piece. It's a great advancement and development because I think that a lot of people,
called for this.
It's important. And I think it's about time.
It's really about time.
A whole 10 years, 10, 11 years after I left secondary school. So that's really weird. Imagine over a decade.
Wait, shoot. I left secondary school in 2009.
10 years.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I'm old.
Yes, you are.
Whoa. That hit me different.
You know, you old lady, look at you in your shawl and your lavender. So, I mean, so
that's my shawl is not, it's a kanga.
Okay.
I don't know if you guys know what that is.
Whatever, I don't
it's
know.
It's a Tanzanian traditional cloth that you wear. It comes in two pieces. It's 1 meter by 1.5 meters. It normally has a proverb. This proverb.
You're blowing grammar right now.
No, but it doesn't. How is proverb? Look at your head. Look at your head. Proverb grammar, you know. You make me sick. Anyways, and each kanga normally has a proverb on it. And this one says, mwanzo mgumu, which means the beginning is hard. And it's supposed to like, you know, motivate you. And kangas are really beautiful. I actually wrote an article on it for Geldum a time ago. Wow, last year, probably the year before that. But yeah, go and read it, guys.
And that's it for this week's bite-sized moment on Zanzibari culture.
Thank you. I'm pushing for this agenda. Because I'm tired of hoes.
There needs to be a drinking game. How many times is Ray's going to mention Zanzibar in every episode?
And how many times Ray's going to mention Beyonce in every episode? Yeah. Speaking of which.
Oh, God. The Lion King.
Of course. Speaking of which. All right, let's not talk about Beyonce, first of all. Let's talk about our queen, Blue Ivy Carter. So she's not only an actress, she's not only a director, she's not only a producer, she's now a supermodel.
She's a personality.
She's not only Beyonce's coach, Jay-Z's life coach. Like, she's not only Solange's mentor. She's everything. She's a therapist. She's a governor. She's an event provider. She does it all. She's an events provider. She's an accountant. You know, she'd be looking after Beyonce's accounts, Beyonce's socials.
Okay, yeah. So she was all there,
and they had the world premiere,
and the Children of Destiny were there too.
The Children of Destiny were there, and Michelle.
I just think that the video that I saw of Beyonce speaking.
Okay, first of all,
Beyonce,
be very
lion.
Careful.
I know, but I'm saying, like, as somebody, like, I just feel like I was reading all the tweets.
I thought you were off socials.
Don't worry about me. I see everything. I see everything, okay? Basically, I see everything. I'm just not there. But I was reading all the, like, the commentary because I read articles online that have embedded the tweets.
Sure.
Don't try me. And I was reading it and I was like, okay. And I watched the video and I was like, all right. So it is, her voice is there, but I also feel like, it's because we know that it's Beyonce that everyone's gonna be like, because I felt the same when I listened to Donald Glover, and anyone that I knew didn't really make me think, oh, it was Chiwetel's one was Scar, but then again, Chiwetel is the only professionally like trained actor only.
Their voice.
Voice acting is a skill in itself.
Yeah, I know.
But what I'm saying is
I'll continue and then I'll add my two cents.
Put your claws back in.
All right.
Because what I'm saying is, because obviously I'm being.
No, you know what? Fair, say it.
But like what I'm saying is that because Chiwetel is a voice actor, and he can embody the character of Scar a lot better and differently because he has the tools and the techniques to do so because that is what he was trained to do. Mm-hmm. It's like him being alongside Beyonce singing and Beyonce has the arias, so don't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like trying to do all that. So when you listen to Scar, you're gonna look at Scar. It's like when Idris Elba was Shere Khan.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you knew it was Idris Elba, but also shit, that was Shere Khan. Do you see what I mean? But when I looked at Beyonce playing Nala and then obviously Donald Glover playing Simba, I was like, okay, well, we know it's them. When we were watching Lion King when it was a cartoon, we didn't know who the actors were. The only one I knew was did you watch Smart Guy growing up?
No. Sorry, you know I don't. Yeah.
Anyway, so there was a.
I did grow up in this country. I did, but I didn't.
It was 99, so.
Shut. Yeah, I mean, I wasn't here.
Yeah, it wasn't here. It was 99. Going on to early. Anyway, so but yeah, so I was just saying like that. That's the way I look at it.
Okay.
So, I mean, she's not. I wouldn't expect her to have those skills.
Okay. Can I say something now? Because you've been talking for a long time.
I think we should move on to the next.
No. First of all, okay. So in all seriousness, as much as I love Beyonce, let's just be real. I watched something where they took Nala's voice from the cartoon Lion King, and they placed that voice over this Lion King where they're trying to make these lions real, okay? And it still sounded weird because these lions, obviously they're supposed to be real life versions or whatever, they can't emote on their faces. Their eyebrows are not moving up and down, okay? Their cheeks aren't flushing, they're not blushing, their eyes aren't widening. So it just generally looks weird. I watched a clip where Beyonce wasn't there. It was Simba and Timon and Pumbaa. And it was, I was like, what is this rubbish?
Yeah, that's what I'm okay. saying. It's weird.
So, and then they put Beyonce's voice on the cartoon ones and it sounded fine. Like, you know, it's Beyonce, but it molded together well because these cartoons can emote. And so what I'm trying to say is, you know, I forgot the tweet that said this, so I have to, you know, I don't want to be stealing people's content out here. I'm going to say it because, you know, I saw it on a tweet. These lions, it's not Beyonce that's not aligning with the lion. It's the lion that's not that's not aligning with Beyonce.
I'm tired.
But also at the same time, I'm glad that my girl's getting all the coin because that coin is going straight to Blue Ivy Carter, Rumi Carter, and Sir Carter.
Yeah.
And let's go. Yeah, she has that southern drawl. People are like, oh, you know, Lupita Nyong'o would have been great, you know, because she's East Africa, blah, blah. It would have still sounded weird.
Like, yeah, it would have still sounded weird. That's what I'm saying. I don't know.
Because unless they're getting all African, all sort of East African, Central African actors, cool. But this isn't, listen, you got white people doing Timon and Pumbaa, and they're like the most blackety black people in that damn movie.
Are they?
Yeah.
They weren't in the
cartoon. They're like the ghetto. Yes, they are. And these people are like middle, like.
The ghetto is the hyenas. The hyenas have always been the black ones.
I don't know.
Ones.
Well, I just feel like maybe Timon and Pumbaa are like Shoreditch pre-gentrification. You know? That's how I look at them as.
Okay, you know? So is that it for the news? I don't know where you're going with this.
Like,
you're trying.
No,
you're reaching.
I'm not reaching. What I'm saying is the lion is not aligning with Beyonce. And that's where I rest my case. Thank you very much. You're still going to watch the film.
Yeah.
Same.
So I had a measured response.
I feel like my response was very balanced.
No.
It pointed out facts.
Uh-uh.
The clips, everything.
I did not disagree? I didn't.
Fantastic.
I'm just saying the technicalities of the things. But anyway. So, all right, cool. Let's get on to
Mostly Lit.
So this week, we read Lewis and Louise by Julie Cohen. Like we said we would, and yeah, like I personally love this book. I feel like it's one of the best books I've read this year, for me, just because it was a beautifully tender and gentle book.
And it is very tender, isn't it?
Yeah, and for those who don't know what the book's about, if you didn't hear our episode last week, it is a book about Lewis and Louise. Lewis / Louise Alder, and living on parallel storylines with one difference. It's the fact they're just a different gender.
Yeah.
And about how certain elements in their storylines are affected because of that and how gender shapes a society. And it's an amazing book, beautiful book. What did you think what your first kind of
so
thoughts?
My first thoughts were, how the hell, because I obviously, when you described it last week, I was like, how is it going to be structured in, like, in terms of chapter and narrative? And I really enjoyed the fact that it went back and forth between the two different versions. And what I love the most is, even sometimes they'll, because they both have the same storyline up until a certain moment in the book where something defining happens, and that defining moment is essentially shaped by the gender. Mm-hmm. And what I loved about it is that it highlighted how gender is very much about the expectations that other people put on you, mm-hmm. rather than you in who you are, because intrinsically speaking, both Louise and Lewis had the same dreams, had mm-hmm. the same ambitions in equal measure, but their road in life was very much dependent on the expectations from other people,
yep.
and how they think they should react based off of these expectations. And what I loved is the fact that even though in these different chapters, so you have maybe it starts off with Louise and she's a little girl. And actually, it starts off the same. So when they're talking about the baby Louise and Lewis, they the narrator refers to him as Louis. So when she's saying Louis, it's both of them.
Lou.
Yeah, it's both of them. And we have that Lou. And about, I love the fact that they talk about their favorite colors, and oh, you know, they come home and everyone's putting them in pink or blue, but they're like yellow and yeah. all of these things.
Yeah. They physically didn't like the colors.
Yeah.
So they gave them other colors.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, when it was Louise, the grandparents came over with dolls and all this yeah. stuff. When it was Lewis, they came over with like teddy bears and cars.
And so it was interesting. And what was great is this idea of expectation and how you should act. So when they were toddlers, both Louise and Louis, remember, this is the same person, by the way. It's just, so each chapter is mum and dad, baby Louise or baby Louis, mm-hmm. and how they're being treated and how they act. And when they were young, I think they were around toddler age, you know, Louise will climb a tree and the mum or the best friend will be like, oh, you know, oh, that one's going to give you a bit of trouble when she's older. Mm. But Lewis will climb a tree and, oh, he's so active. Like, mm-hmm. what an amazing kid, you know. He's going to be such an active young boy.
Yeah.
And it's these things that obviously it molds you in a way in you just reacting so differently to your stimuluses. Mm. And each stimulus stimuli. Wow, I really said stimuluses. Wow, like I did not, wow.
I'm here to help you through.
You know what, I had a rough day.
It's fine, it's all right.
I fully said stimuluses. Actually, no, stimulus.
Stimulus.
And stimuli.
Yeah.
I'm disgusted with myself. I'm fully disgusted with myself. It's like saying fishes. Fishes is not a word. But I don't say that though, because I'm cultured. Anyways, back to Lewis and Louise.
So
yeah,
the general questions that I tend to have, because obviously within the book there's a we're not going to spoil it for you guys who want to read it, but there's a huge there's a huge event that happens
yeah.
that then causes friction. Or causes a divergence in the path between certain characters in the book.
I would say between Louise/Lewis and their parents.
Yeah, their parents and their friends.
So they have these friends. There's twins,
Ali and Benny.
Yeah.
And their mum is best friends with Louise/Louise's mum.
Yeah.
And they're close, and the book crosses class lines. It crosses gender lines. It also crosses
friendship and family,
sexuality. It's loads of different
sexuality. Things. Yeah.
So many different things in there.
In the book, actually, and what I loved about it is just the touching on how sexuality in both characters doesn't change. It's the same, whether they're a boy or a girl.
Yeah, yeah.
They're both bisexual. Mm-hmm. And they both deal with their sexuality, I guess I would say, differently because of expectations.
They're different things. But we'll get to that bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, like, the annoying thing, like, one thing that I've looked at when I was reading it was about the impacts of gender in society. And it kind of made, and the book really made me think about the way that we are conditioned by our parents and the kind of things. There was a scene in the book where Louise was encouraged to
wear
contacts because, you know, she didn't have, because her eyesight wasn't great, but also she was encouraged to wear contacts because her mum, who was a beauty pageant winner, her mum was a beauty pageant winner and all that stuff, and, you know, she was very, like, conscious of her looks and her appearance and all this stuff, and she is like to Louise that she has to wear her contacts because it makes her look better.
Eyes are so beautiful, you should show them more, stuff.
But then also, Lewis, he never got that.
Yeah.
He was okay. Like, they were like, you know, he was made to be the quote unquote the nerd kind of guy, the kind of nerdy, like, you know, just run of the mill.
Yeah.
Wear your glasses. Yeah. It is what it is.
Yeah.
I find that really weird because I was always told to wear my contact lenses because I look better without the glasses on.
Really?
Growing up. And I find that really strange. When I read that, I was like, this is a really weird trope, but I'm probably just an anomaly.
Oh, but I am, because I got told not to wear, because why are you putting things in your... But that's just advancement. Like,
why are you putting things in your eye?
Yeah, that's just like, why would you do that to yourself? Don't be stupid, you're going to ruin your eyes. But that's just, I guess, just, you know, parents being...
Yeah, it was a weird thing because once you get to a certain age, you start to be aware of the opposite sex / the same sex in a completely different way. And when you... contact lenses were in, braces were out.
Yeah. Did you ever have that moment where you were like, I'm a boy? Did you ever feel that?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, it was one of those with a boy...
How do you feel like a boy or a man?
With a boy, you're not told. And with a girl, you're told. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and you're just told in a different way. So with a boy, you're kind of expected to do things. And obviously, you get a lot of free rein to do stuff. So if I was to run out on street, fall over, graze my leg, or come back all cuts and bruises, come back fighting, all this stuff, oh, he's a boy, you know what I mean? Like, he's just roughing and tumbling and doing all that stuff. If it was a girl that had done that exact same thing, it'd have been like, what are you doing out there? You are a girl, all that kind of stuff. So I feel like...
I got that a lot.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So like, you're told... Girls are told and consistently reminded that they're girls. Boys aren't necessarily reminded or told they're boys. It's something that
outside, but obviously I consider myself a girl.
A woman.
Yeah, a girl woman. And I would say that I am female. But in my head, I'm thinking, when did I know that? And because I know that, like, just... I just know inside.
But you know that because obviously you were...
But I don't know if I know that because it's other people telling me.
But you ultimately, yeah, so I'm saying, you know that because you are told that, but then also you feel that as well.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is what I mean, when it comes to people that are non-binary or trans, they know that. They know how they feel. They know how they feel. And it's obviously they are not aligned with the body that they were born into.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of... And I think that's the kind of nuance that a lot of people don't think about or don't... offer trans people or non-binary people, because they're like, how can you you physically just how you look, but everybody has an intrinsic feeling about how they feel.
Yeah, I think this is interesting because I've talked about it before with regards to like Freud's work on like the oceanic state and how like when you're younger and you're almost one with the world, there you are encouraged in a way, exactly as you said, like the boy is encouraged to seek outside, to go outside, to go into the world, whereas girls are, I do think it's very different now in terms of, well, where we live anyway, but obviously it's still the same, you know,
in certain countries
and blah blah blah, and not, but there is this. Now we have learned, or I would hope we're learning to treat like children that come into the world in a way that allows them almost to understand who they are and also say to the world, this is who I am, rather than tell me who I am. Mm. But then at the same time, it's so hard to unlearn that because the way our social media, the way our media in general is, it's very telling, like beauty products, women, like fashion industry, women, hardly not many men. Like, do you know what I mean? And also just like, I know for me, if I get pregnant and find out I'm having a girl, oh my God,
It's a different kind of experience.
This little bitch is going to be in a tutu every day. What do you mean? But then I'm like,
Is I mean, are we...
I'm thinking about it now. I'm conscious of it.
That's what I mean. So whenever I... even when I consider like my little nieces and nephews being born and whatnot, and I look at them, I'm just like, what... I have to be very conscious about the expectations that I've been inherently had to unlearn and kind of deconstruct my own self, but in the face of their parents who have not. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like, I will look at it and I'd be like, oh, she might be a tomboy. Even that statement is a bit odd.
Right.
But like, she might be somebody who likes to play football. She might be somebody who likes to climb trees. She might be someone. Might be somebody who gets into fights. She might be someone who's a bit like rough and tumble, and that's okay.
Yeah,
that's the character. The character is quote unquote boisterous or whatever that is. He might be somebody who is gentle. He might be somebody who is a bit soft around the edges. He might
just,
be somebody.
Yeah,
who is
just
a bit,
even those like the connotations that we put around, like we put on top of gendered, like the way we gender people. Yeah. And the fact that we put these on them, it's so stifling of character.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that I was a sort of feminine child, but I almost grew into that. Yeah. I was very like active as a young kid. I was backbiting, chatting, I was loud. I've always been that way, right? But I think pink wasn't my favorite color. Pink is my favorite color at the age of 26.
Yeah.
Not even my favorite, but yeah, I have loads of pink things.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's something that I've come to like, and it's like, why are you gonna put me in pink? I don't like pink.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's so weird how when we gender people, we gender girls and we tell them to maybe be a bit more silent, a bit more softer around the edges. But I'm hoping, really hoping that that is not, well, from the circle of people that we know and the type of people that I hope are listening and enjoy this content, we are very much aware of how we're raising our brothers and younger brothers and sisters, our children, how we talk to the elder in the community. Because when somebody tells my little one, I don't have a little one, but I actually do, like, oh, you know, don't cry, you're a boy, that's been done. I just get so angry. I'm like, don't tell him that. Let the boy cry.
Yeah.
It's actually okay.
Yeah.
And that really riles me up.
I think it's even dangerous to say, oh, let the boy cry. I feel like it's find out why he's crying. Do you know what I mean? Because he obviously cannot
express. Yeah, he's crying for a reason, but it's just like, don't cry about it.
Find out why he's crying and then let him know that it's okay to do so and all sorts. But also let your girls know that it's okay to be angry.
Yeah, right.
Let them know that it's okay to be...
It's okay to speak up an octave.
And not be called and not be told to, you know... I mean, there's words that come in like you're being unreasonable, you're being too emotional, you're being all this stuff, and all this stuff are kind of attributed to around that. And when you've got characters like Lewis, especially in this one, like when he was like, oh, you know, there was two scenes where Louise saw her mom's makeup and her mom was like, oh yeah, come and I'm going to show you this. And then Lewis was in there, saw the makeup and the stuff, and he was like playing around with it. And then she dragged him out and was like, go downstairs, all that stuff. And I just feel like it's just that. And it creates that kind of like separation between the way that you interact with your own mothers, your fathers, because of the whole thing just becomes quite, again, binary.
And also, what I found really hilarious, not hilarious, but.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Like, weird and funny is that in this book, Louise is not close to her mum.
And that's for a particular reason.
For a particular reason. But Lewis is very close to his mum.
Yeah.
And depending on the gender, it's like that interaction between Lewis and his father, but then Louise and her mother.
Yeah.
And how that plays out.
Yeah. So early on in the book, both Lewis and Louise are contacted by a parent to come and see them because one of the parents is suffering from an illness, from a cancer.
Yeah, from cancer.
And it's very interesting to see that the father goes to physically collect Louise.
Yeah.
As her father is like, oh, daddy, he goes to collect her. And Lewis's mom calls him.
Yeah.
So it's a very, very interesting. And it starts off with like daddy's girl and mummy's boy.
Mummy's boy, yeah.
When one's born and the other.
Yeah.
And the perspectives that come with it. And I found that's very interesting. So would you say you're mummy's girl or daddy's boy? Mummy's girl.
Well, every time I say that I'm a daddy's girl, my mother gets offended. Literally, I'll be like, yeah, like I'm a daddy's girl. Is it your dad that buys you clothes in this house? Is it your dad that does this? I'm like, relax, G. Like, calm down. Yeah. But I would say my brother, older brother, is like the golden son. Like, man can do no wrong in my mother's eyes. Literally, he did the worst thing possible, and my man is still covered with that love boy. But I mean, I think it's beautiful because, I mean, she kind of did the same thing to me when, like, I moved out and stuff. She was really there for me, and she showed me that love that I think I've always wanted from a mother. But then again, I have silent, happy moments with my dad. Like, I can just sit with my dad in silence and it's cool.
Mm.
Like, and we talk and stuff. But my mother is very involved in, like, she is very involved in my mental health in terms of, like, she cares about. And it's only now that I'm older and I've become more confident in talking to her about stuff like that, that she's very much like, it's okay.
Mm.
Like, back in the day, I used to have, like, lots of, like, oh, you know, you're married, you need to get married, da, 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 you're Muslimic, blah, 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 you finish uni, you get a job, like, next step. But now she's very much like, you know, everything in your own time. I'm like, ah, the same woman.
Person, yeah.
And so I think I've found a balance now.
Yeah.
That they're very much, both of them are very involved in my life.
Yeah.
And they, like, I look at my dad, he's very tender. My mum is loud like me, but not loud, just like outspoken.
Yeah. I find that's very interesting because,
like, she's like a matriarch, her and my grandmother. Oh my goodness.
Because what I found in mine is that I'm very similar to my mum.
Yeah.
And my sister's very similar to my dad.
Yeah.
And we all balance each other out.
Yeah.
When we're all together, but then also we all clash when we're all together, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So, like, my sister gives my dad the balance he needs, and I give my mum the balance they need. So it's kind of, it makes it easier to kind of manage that.
Yeah.
Environment. Obviously, my sister is my mum's daughter, but she's also my dad's little girl.
Yeah.
And I'm my dad's only son.
Yeah.
And my mum's only boy. You see what I mean? So it's a really weird
golden
kind of
boy. Yeah.
It's not even that. You can't even be the golden boy if you're the only boy. You're just the boy.
I'm her only son. But it's so interesting in this book because
I'm not even the golden one because of the age gap as well. There's a 7-year age gap. Yeah. So I'm not necessarily the golden boy. I'm just the boy.
So that's a lot of responsibility.
You know? So it's like, it's a lot. And it's just very different. So I wouldn't say I was a mummy's
boy. But I feel like you're mummy's boy.
But, like, I'm close to my mum.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? Like,
I would say you're more close with your mum.
Yeah, yeah. Because you would look at a particular, like, you know how how, what am I going to say? It's like, you know how you look at your, for example, you look at your dad and you'll see a particular, there's a threshold that's just not there because he's your dad. You know what
but,
I mean?
But like,
or my mum, it's like.
But if push comes to shove, I'd go to my mum to have my back. Because I would say, I mean, like in terms of like my mom is like tactful and my dad is like laid back. So if I'm in trouble, I'd go to the one that's not laid back. That's like, all right, listen, I know sometimes we clash or whatever.
So she has a plan. She's pragmatic.
She'll just be like, all right, you need to shut up. And you know, this is what will happen. And my dad is like, calming, and you know, I can cry. I guess I can cry to both of my parents, but if I cry to my mom, she'll get so stressed out. Like, I remember I told my mom that I had lost weight, and this woman called my dad in the next room, tell her to start eating. So my dad calls like on the phone, being like, why are you doing this? And I'm like, yo, I'm trying to be through hot girl summer here, and then you guys are worrying. The next day, I get a call from my older brother, being like, "All right, so what's wrong? You know, are you stressed out? Like, are you feeling down again? Have you been going to therapy? Like, you know, mum called me, said that you've lost weight." I'm like, "This woman hasn't even seen me. She's, it's crazy." So, and I do feel like that was.
But that's the thing, and that's
what was Louise's mum in a way.
Yeah, that's what I do see in Louise's mum.
Yeah,
but then also it's like with Louis and his mum. There were no vulnerable moments.
There wasn't. In that,
he was really trying to be, because I think he detached himself from his parents in a way that a lot of men typically do. They detach themselves because it's like, you know, there is an attachment with apparently with women when it comes to their families and their mum. There's an attachment, there's an expectation there. And I think that Julie Cohen kind of writes that really beautifully in the book. Like, she just says, like, there is an attachment between her daughter, well, Louise's daughter and Louise's mum. Mm-hmm. There's an attachment that she has with the family. There's certain things that decisions can't be made quickly because everything has to be considered all the time. And it proves quite difficult for Louise to kind of make a decision as it goes. But with regards to Louis, though, Louis and men in particular can detach
very easily.
So he could leave, he could get married, he could then leave his wife to come back.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? And then, like, his dad in the dad storyline and the male storyline, Louis's storyline.
Yeah, the male storyline.
He basically was like, you know, the dad separated.
Left.
Because
I want to go on a gap year and travel.
I mean, obviously, but like when we find out the reasons why he left, it wasn't to do with anything interpersonally with regards to him and his wife. It was like a wider array of things covered, like around masculinity and all that kind of stuff. And because Louis and Louise's dad is
he's a baller,
but he's not the archetypal
macho man. Father,
he's a very gentle.
Yeah,
he's a very like calm. He's a very.
I love him. I love him in the girl storyline.
Yeah, yeah. He loves that. Like, I mean, he loves his family. He talks. He has that stuff. He's very intuitive, as you will see, like, you know, throughout the book.
Yeah,
and it's like.
A lot was put on her. Yeah.
But then the dad in Lewis's storyline, it was that whole thing, well, Lewis is okay. Lewis is fine.
Because he's a boy.
He's a guy. He's married. He's got his books.
Finally,
he can go because there's a guilt that he doesn't want to continue living with. Yeah. So he just decides to go because he's always wanted to do that.
And he's a man in and of himself, so he can do that.
So, without doing too much of a spoil, he wanted to take his wife away to travel with her, but she didn't want to leave the city because that's the city, that's the town she knows.
She's very attached to it.
And this is what I mean, it's that whole that maternal focus, like the maternal energy is
but I also feel like that's also socially constructed as well.
Yeah.
Because for me, I do think it is socially constructed, like half and half, like nature and nurture, right? There is this in-depth, really intricate and an innate feeling that you get when you maybe have a child. But to what extent is that pushed forward and really cemented by motherhood and how you should be as a mother, you know, or like, oh, a mother will never leave you. Oh, Mother's Day and all of these things about mothers. To what extent is that these are the expectations of you? Like when we hear stories of mothers leaving children, we get so much more shocked than when we talk about quote unquote deadbeat dads. It's become like, yeah, sure, I just don't live with my dad. Oh yeah, my dad left when I was a kid. All right, cool. Oh, my mum left when I was a kid. What the hell?
Yeah.
How?
Yeah.
Whoa. Oh, congrats to your dad for taking care of you. I'm like, excuse me?
Congratulations.
Yeah, it's wild.
And even as the point you made about Mother's Day and Father's Day, like the expectations for
Mother's Day
is high. There's brunches, taking them out, taking them on holiday,
buying them mulberry bags.
There's flowers, there's chocolates, there's wine.
Dads get socks.
Dads, you know, like, I mean, they do get kind of a bare brunt of it, but they also don't make a fuss about it, if that makes any sense. They don't, there's this kind of like, oh, well, I'm here. You know what I mean? If they are there. But like, it's like, you know what I mean? They're like, well, I'm here, so whatever. Yeah. They probably get a card. They'll probably be happy, quote unquote, happy with the card. Yeah. And some father, but also it becomes a question of, do we have to, if I did feel unhappy about what I was getting on Father's Day, do I have the right to kind of say that? Because ultimately, the mother carries a child for 9 months, like, you know,
but also, no, when you create that child, and I think the father's, because that lackluster energy also is there post the baby. It's like the mother's always there, and then the father is like in and out. But what I think is hilarious is I'm rewatching Friends. Not always, but with how it's portrayed in the media, like it's okay if this is how the father is. Now, I remember I went to Africa Rights the other day, and I listened to a panel on our father's daughters, and this girl talked about how her friends, they always talk about their mums. And it's so weird because she doesn't live with her dad, so she just never talks about him. And her friends don't talk about their father. So she thought that these people or their friends just don't have their dads around them. And when her friend, like, one day randomly talked about her dad, it's like, oh, like, where's your dad? It's like, we live with him. It's like, oh. And it's that, like, you don't talk about your father as much as your mum.
But then is it because they are women? And they have more to say, because I feel like
I feel like
a mom would be more involved in their daughter's lives than a man.
I don't think
or
so.
Or the father, that traditionally, maybe.
But if I'm you're sure, in the same house,
if he's in the same house, yeah, and it all depends on the relationship the
domestic
father has,
relationship,
you know,
yeah.
the relationship the father has with his children, and like, you know.
But no, I really like this book.
Yeah, like it's
very nice, it's very tender, and it's very intricate.
It's amazing. And like, just a few things about the repercussions that happen with regards to specific events.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, women bear the brunt of the repercussions because, like, you know,
the physical brunt.
There's two Lewis and Louises that come back. There's two Lou's that come back. There's one Lou who has a daughter, and there's one Lou who has a wife.
Yeah, that he doesn't love.
But yeah, but there's that. But
they're breaking up.
Yeah, but there's also, which one's the easiest one to let go?
Well, do you see what I mean? The answer is in the novel, right? Because Louise comes back to Casablanca with her daughter. Louis comes back by himself.
Yeah.
So, and this wife is just like, on the phone somehow. He's even like calling her at times when he knows that she's not going to pick up. So he can deliberately miss her call and her emails. Yeah. So I think the answer to that is just the woman has this luggage based off of the issues that have the things that happen. Who bears the brunt? Clearly in this novel anyway, I would say it's Louise. Mm-hmm. But then can Lewis talk about the issues that happened to him,
And a final kind of, not final, but there was a huge question around masculinity and what that looks like. So we obviously spoke about of Alder, that's Lewis and Louise's dad.
Yeah.
And he basically had, he was a founder, he's from the family that founded the town, and they have a mill that creates paper for magazines and stuff.
They're Marlon.
And obviously he is not like
macho-y.
Like, you know, he
He's not a man.
He wants to be an engineer. He's very mathematical. He likes culture. He likes the idea of traveling. He does all that stuff. And there's a scene at the very beginning of the book where he's talking like to some of his colleagues.
Yeah.
Also, like colleagues slash his staff eventually. But
when is baby due?
Yeah, when is baby due and all this stuff. And like, you know, Irv is very sensitive. He's like rubbing like his wife's stomach.
Yeah. This is a cutie.
Like rubbing her stomach, like he's assessing her body. He's like he's being there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, and he doesn't feel like he can kind of express that side of him to those men when he's talking about like the pregnancy thing, because ultimately, as much as the physical brunt is on the woman to give birth, it's also an emotional brunt as well for both people involved.
And I think what the book did really well is showing how actually fathers do immediately have that connection with their children. Because obviously as a mother, you're expected to like hold the baby in your arms and oh my God, you fall in love immediately. And there's always that doubt whether the father will have that. And I was watching Friends and it was when Ross was like freaking out about having Ben and he took his dad out and he was like, when did you know that you were like a father, and when did you feel like a father? Because I don't know if I'll feel that when the baby comes. And in this book, you know, the mother, like Peggy has the baby and she's like preoccupied because obviously in those times the man will be told to like go outside to wait.
Yeah.
And she has a baby and it's like, all right, the midwife's like, okay, let me bring him, like your husband, back in. And then she's like, wait, how do I look? Oh my God, give me a mirror, give me some lipstick, da, 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 da. And then like the man comes in now and he's just like, this is my child. I'm here for the baby. Yeah. I don't care how you look.
Yeah.
And he like, is like, oh my God, like beautiful.
Yeah, because he's always looked at his wife as beautiful anyway. So he doesn't like, you know what I mean?
He's not like, yeah.
That's what I mean. And it's kind of
and
like,
he falls in love with Lewis / Louise.
And there's another pivotal kind of moment within it which kind of questions, like, you know, about men not talking to one another, men not having friends that can help them through tough times, which culminates in quite a really tragic and traumatic experience for a lot of people involved. And this whole thing just kind of made me really think about like the impacts that all these things have. I mean, the beauty of this novel is like it's a very small community and with very few characters, but it kind of like explodes and smashes wide open the interaction between one another.
Yeah.
And you know, toxic masculinity kills.
Fam.
And harms and destroys so many people.
And
it's like, yeah,
you know. Last week we talked about how like men will maybe sometimes use women as emotional blankets and just spill to the point where it's actually harmful.
Yeah. And emotional blankets, physical blankets.
Yeah, physical blankets. And in this book, there is that idea of this man has one of the Louise's friends, the twins, has no, obviously, that person or somebody to talk to. So exerts that over Louise. And I think personally, it was almost a way of saying, have all of this pain. And it was just like horrific because there are those spaces do not exist. Mm. Or if they do exist, they're not comfortable enough.
Yeah.
That energy is now put on a woman because you must be here for me.
Yeah.
You have to be here for me because nobody else is. I must put all of this emotional shit on you. And if you don't accept it, you are a horrific human being. Mm. If you say no and like turn a blind eye to it, you are a horrific human being. Mm. You have to be the nurturer. You can't like say no to this. Like you have to be that person. And how dare you to not be there? And I think that kills, you know?
Yeah.
Because to what extent can I be a sponge to pain?
Mm.
Because do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it caused such a physical effect on Louise to the point where it broke a lot of her relationships.
Yeah.
That she has with her parents, her friends.
Yeah. Even the reaction of when they both return, The tones are different.
Yeah.
The tones are different, and it's a very, yeah, it's a very cleverly written book, and I think that everybody should go out and buy it.
It's a really good book. I really enjoyed it.
And I think it's, yeah, and I think, yeah, and I think like the core of the book though is love, and about how that can kind of be like impacted.
And relationships.
Love, relationships. So love.
Not just romantic, but like friendship.
Relationships. Just
mother, father, love. Just
general kind of like love. Understanding across the board about each other. And I think that's one of the things that kind of really hit home for me in this book. So I'll say go out and get it. Probably going to round up there.
Yeah.
But I think it's a great book. It's not that long either. And yeah.
Yeah. If you listen to it on Audible, it's like 10 hours.
Yeah.
I listen to it on 1.5 speed.
Also, there are other themes in it. Class, race. Yeah, and all that stuff. But yeah. So.
Lovely.
All right. So
you don't have questions for me.
I don't have questions for you because you don't do your homework anyway.
Well, okay. Give me the damn homework then.
I'm
going
to give you the homework on air so everybody can hold you accountable to all of this stuff.
Let's go.
Basically, you need to watch seasons. Okay, not season. Well, yeah, you do need to watch seasons 3. Watch season 3 of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Not season 1.
No. Well, okay, you don't have to.
I think I started a few episodes of season 1.
Okay, watch season 1 of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And I
will. What's up in season 3? What happens in season 3?
I think just the, I think
is
the
that,
layout
that
think,
iconic I, is no, that iconic. Oh, I never had my dad.
No, I think the layout for me the layout changed, so the mansion changed.
Oh, but is that when light skin outfit
comes? No. but I'd say watch Fresh Prince of Bel-Air season 1. I would also say I'm going to give you a list of music videos to watch.
Okay. I've watched the thong ones. I feel like that's the major one. And I know that song.
The major one?
Yeah, that's okay, the major. The major like
anyway,
video.
Gonna, okay. Anyway.
I had that playing on my 10th birthday party. I literally have it. I used to love that song.
Did any of you understand what was happening?
No, of course not.
No one understood what was happening in there.
Maybe the elders did, but we had that blowing up.
Oh, Matt. Okay.
Like on my 10th birthday party.
but yeah, I'm going to give you a list of music videos, but I need you to watch season 1 of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Noted, Mr. Reed.
So we're going to do that, and then I will give you a list of stuff to watch, and then I'll quiz you on it.
I mean, I'm going to like do all the, like, I'm going to win the quiz.
No, because I'm gonna give you expansive questions. You need to be watching it in detail.
Oh,
you're taking notes. I need you to do research on the ones that I send you. I need you to be able to answer why they wrote the song. I need you to.
Oh my god!
So I need you to be on Genius.
You know I have a job, right?
Okay. Okay. So.
Okay. Cool.
Yes,
what other music videos are you gonna tell me that off air?
I'm gonna tell you off air, but also. I do think like there's you like the whole period between millennium and 2010, right?
Yeah.
So yeah.
I like that.
I'll have a collection.
But also maybe 90s might be even better because I know nothing. When I tell you nothing, I mean like from like 1993 when I was born until like 1999.
Okay. I'm going to give
even
you...
Even later than that, I just don't know.
All right, cool.
Like, I was in Zanzibar living it up.
I will mix it up for you.
Okay.
Mix it up for you. And if you guys have any kind of, ideas that you want to give, just tweet Mostly Lit and let us know what we should do.
I should do, because I'm lost out here.
You're lost. I don't know.
I'm getting better, though.
I don't know for you sometimes. I'm sorry.
Anyways,
Mostly Flicks.
What are you watching?
What am I watching? So I basically... I've been watching a lot of stuff. I have just finished Killing Eve.
Right? Tell me it wasn't amazing. I love this stuff.
I loved it. And I mean, a lot of my friends didn't really like it. They thought that it was quite weird and it was...
why?
Like the story arc wasn't strong or supported and stuff. But I really enjoyed this season. And I think that it was really good. I think that, you know, Jodie Comer is an amazing...
Now it's just...
Amazing actress. All them accents. I was just like...
Spins me all the time.
I got it. Like, Sandra Oh was... Sandra Oh as... Yeah. What's her name? Eve.
Yeah.
Eve Pilastri. Pissed me off. Just to no end. But, you know what I mean? That's her role in the thing. To be an annoying...
Yeah.
Protagonist.
Yeah.
/ antagonist. Yeah, it was great. I really enjoyed it. Great storyline. I think Phoebe Waller-Bridge wrote it, didn't it? Or wrote a few episodes, Fleabags.
I actually need to watch that because I feel like all of you want to talk about it and I haven't
watched it. I really enjoyed... The thing I love about Killing Eve is that the... Obviously, having leading women in the...
I love that.
Having such a varying... roles in that they're so powerful, like in that, you know, Fiona Shaw's character, Petunia Dursley.
Petunia Dursley.
So Fiona Shaw's character was, she's very, you just never know where you stand with her.
You don't, and it's scary. You're like, oh my God, like, what's up?
And I think it's fantastic. I just don't know. I feel like this season was really good.
You know what I loved? There was a black woman in there. Who was pregnant? When do we ever see pregnant characters just being characters and without it being like a story about them being pregnant?
Yeah, I didn't
really loved that. I was like, oh my God.
She mentioned she was pregnant.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. But like,
but it was just seeing her at the beginning and she was just pregnant and it was like, fine.
But you always,
And I was like, oh my God, I don't see that.
It makes you realize that the way that obviously when women are writing the stories, like the stories are just... The stories, like, you know what I mean?
Stories.
Like, you know what I mean? And it's just fantastic.
So, of course, she's pregnant and she's working because that's what women do.
Are you okay to fly?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
All right, let's go.
Go ahead and do the
thing. And it's not like a thing where I love that.
What do you think about, like, Eve's obsession with Villanelle? She has it's a weird kind of, like...
Yeah, it gets her ticking, right? I think it's about attention. Mm. She loves that attention. And I think...
Eve's attention.
They both like each other's attention.
Yeah.
But Eve especially loves having the serial killer who's enigmatic and just, you know, different and, you know, charismatic in a way. She loves knowing that she has that attention.
Mm.
And she's a very boring character, in my opinion. Nothing wild or nothing ingenious about her, really.
That's the point. She's so mundane.
Bland. Exactly, and mundane. However, I think... The fact that this interesting character has an interest in her turns her on. And I think that's very normal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there are several scenes in there where she capitalises on that.
Yeah. She loves me. She's obsessed with me. Yeah. So I know that she'll be interested.
Yeah. What do you want for dinner? Shall I cook spaghetti? I'm like, this woman is weird. I'm sorry. Like,
and they were both like playing a game.
Yeah, spaghetti.
She's like, oh, I've come to kill you, blah, blah, blah. And then she took the pill or whatever. She's like, why did you do that? She's like, oh my God. And I was like, you two need to behave. And then they started laughing.
And I was like, you know, you're actually
I was like, you guys are actually wild.
You guys are just playing with each other's lives. It's just pushing each other to the limits of what they can and can't
do. It's excitement, right?
Yeah.
Everyone's bored and wants some excitement in their life, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah.
And thing is, though, when you've been through that and you realise that the excitement is toxic, you want it. You don't want that shit.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't want it at all. I remember telling one of my friends, I was like, I'm so bored, but I'm so happy that I'm bored.
I was thinking this the other day.
I was like, oh, I'm a bit bored now. I was like,
my life is so like, wow.
Like, my life is interesting.
But it's fine.
I tell other people and they're like, what things I'm doing? And they're like, oh my God. But with me, I love a new project. I love something different. And so when I get a little bit bored, I want something else. And my friend was like, girl, you better stay there and enjoy that shit.
Enjoy it, yeah.
I love it. Personally, for me, I love that boring ass energy when your life is actually peaceful and nice.
Enjoy the peace, bruv.
It's beautiful. I'm like, I don't want nothing else.
Enjoy that.
I think it's beautiful.
Enjoy that.
Because I feel like that's what everybody wants. And then when they have it, they're like, oh. I'm like, nah, G.
Oh my gosh, the drama in my life.
Yeah, nah.
And they go to Twitter. And that's what it is. Anyway, so...
Oh, man.
But yeah, I feel like it was a great season. I feel like it was a good season. I mean, not everybody would have liked it, but I feel like it was, I think it was truly just, you know, amazing cast, beautifully. Even when Zoe Wanamaker, like, was in it, just, I was like, I love her just as someone.
Yeah.
I just feel like you're just great.
What's
the other thing you watched?
I started watching Years and Years.
Okay.
And I'm loving it so far.
Yeah.
What I love and I find so bloody creepy is that young girl who has filters on her face. And obviously technology has advanced so that filters are no longer just on your phone, but they're actually like on your 3D, face. They're 3D and you can just be in them. And this girl, when they were talking about how she was like, the parents were looking up her, her like socials and what she's like researching, and she's researching like being trans and stuff and coming out, and they were all like supportive. And I was like, you know, you can, like, we love you, blah blah blah. And she's like, oh, I'm not transgender, I'm trans data or
transhuman.
Is it transhuman?
Transhuman.
Transhuman or something. So basically, she wants to basically become a USB. Have you ever seen?
Piss off, Ray.
She wants to become a floppy disk. Like, she wants to become a USB.
She wants to become data.
She wants to become. Have you seen that film with Scarlett Johansson? When she, at the end, she turns into a USB. she gets so advanced. It's a rubbish film, but I personally love it.
Emma.
It's something with a name like that.
Something like, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think.
I just laughed my head off. I literally lost it.
What episode are you on?
I'm at the episode when what's her name has just lost out on. I think she's like presented as like the Boris Johnson, or like even.
Well, what episode is that?
I don't know. I think it's like the second one.
Okay, it's episode. Okay.
I think it's the second or third one.
Yeah,
it's hilarious.
It moves mad. The series is fantastic. I love Russell T Davies. I love all of them. Russell Tovey.
And we have like immigrants coming in from like Russia or whatever.
I love them all. Like,
yeah, Emma Thompson is amazing.
I think the whole cast. I just have. Time for each and every single one of them, and like, but it also raises those questions about like how things just kind of move along.
You don't even realize,
and it's like, you know, you're probably gonna get to a point where it's like, you know, obviously they make a comparison between transgenderism and transhumanism, and about how people kind of abuse those kind of the people that have that want that.
But it's so weird because the first time I heard of that, I laughed and thought, what the hell? But then I realized, I'm like, wait, this, like, for me, maybe this is ignorance. Yeah. And what is ignorance? Because if somebody wants to be a USB, I mean.
The thing is, this is not the first time we've seen that, though. We saw that in the San Junipero episode of Black Mirror, where.
I don't think I watched that one.
That's the one that won.
Wait, is that in the. The head.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Like, you know, instead of dying, you upload your consciousness to the thing, and that's what it is.
But I don't know, man.
But like, and I mean, a part of me is like, I probably say that if I was in my last years, like my last four or five years, I was in a coma, put me in San Junipero I die, like physically die, then whatever. I have that in my will. I have that in my.
But then I'll be in that place forever, right?
Yeah, but you'll be in that.
My
place.
consciousness will be
in that place until they take you out.
Yeah,
and then you're dead, sort of thing.
But what if like I die in real life, but then my consciousness?
No, I'm saying like when you die in real life,
so your consciousness gets uploaded.
So in San Junipero episode, right? For those who haven't watched it, anyway, but in the San Junipero episode. One of the girls is in a coma.
Yeah.
So because she's in a coma, she had an accident when she was younger, and then she's been in a coma for years. And they uploaded her consciousness to this place.
Yeah.
Her lover, her friend, whatever, goes periodically to there.
Yeah.
And things. So basically, so you can be alive. So you're alive, and you can upload your consciousness to this space. The option then comes out, when you die, do you want your consciousness to be uploaded there forever? Or do you want to
just die
physically? So
what would you do?
So that's what I'm saying. Like if I was in a coma for all that time, and it got to a stage where they're like, we can't keeping you alive. And it's like, oh, we're going to give you 2 years and whatever. I'd be like, well, okay, fine. I'd make my peace with the human body. And I'll just look, bye. I'm going to go to this place. I'm going to enjoy the 2 years. I'm going to have fun. I'm going to do whatever I do. I'm going to eat the food I want. I'm going to go to whichever decade I want. I'm going to do all that stuff. And then when those 2 years are up, I'm going to be like, cool, I'll make the decision.
So you don't want to be there forever?
I wouldn't want to be there forever.
Because
you are there forever, but you're there forever in the state that you go in. Do you see what I mean?
You
can't age. So you choose the age you want to be, you do all of that stuff. And then you just stay
I agree,
there.
That's what I would like
I think, I feel like there's a healthy option there. Because I do think like sometimes you can't live, like I don't, living forever is a bit like,
it's dead.
It's one of the most egotistical things of the human.
I think living forever gives living no purpose.
Yeah. Yeah. But then also you're not even living forever on the world, you're living forever in another, another dimension. You're not even on the physical world that you grew up in.
And also, do you learn lessons? Do you go through experiences? Do you form relationships with other people?
That's the thing though, but if you've lived a life on earth where you've aged physically and whatnot, then you upload your consciousness and then you're now back into your 20-year-old body and you've lived that 60, 70-year-old life.
That's mad.
It's, you're just like, all the lessons you've learned, you've learned.
Yeah.
You know the
Can
the,
you experience the, heartbreak in that realm?
Yeah, you can experience emotions and whatnot.
Can you get other people's consciousness who have died or are in a coma into that as well, like interact with each other?
Yeah, all the people that they interact with are people that have uploaded their consciousness into the space. You see what I mean?
Fantastic.
So I feel like, so for example, if we got to like...
We should do that for
banks. You know, if we were like, if we got to like 80 yeah. and whatnot, and then obviously whatever, we went to the consciousness and I'm like, oh, right, that's right, when she was 20.
Hey!
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But we already know like the
remember 80... Remember when we used to do most
of it? Yeah, the 80 years like that have come by. You see what I'm saying? And I think that question is explored in years and years at later.
They
on
love that concept because I watched the final episode of Black Mirror with Miley Cyrus in it.
Yeah.
And she, her consciousness, she was in a coma, got uploaded into this doll and stuff. Yeah. And
And I think that's kind of where we're going. Like a lot of
With the way social media is and the fact that our brains now are just so short term. Our data is
being kind of like decentralized and all that stuff.
Yeah. Like companies know more information about you than the police.
Yeah. Yeah.
Literally.
Yep.
And that's explored in like the second episode of Black Mirror this season.
Yeah.
It's wild. Yeah. So I'm watching that and I'm obviously watching Love Island.
I've just finished Stranger Things.
Oh, so I'm going to give that myself a nice weekend because I've booked tickets to go and see that for Secret Cinema. I don't know how it's going to work out.
I got an email about that, but I didn't go.
So I don't know how it's going to work out because I think this is the first time they've done a series rather than a movie.
So, oh my God,
imagine them, like, it's going to be wild. Like, the upside down, like, physical, is going to be amazing.
Yeah.
That's in November, so I'm excited to go and see that. So I'm going to literally spend a weekend just watching Stranger Things. Yeah. I literally love it.
I love it. But this season three...
Is it good?
It's really good.
They've grown up a little, haven't they?
Do you know what it does? And the thing is, and that's really taken into account with it. And one thing I loved about this season was just that the idea of friendship. And it made me nostalgic for a time period that I never experienced. You know what I mean? Like, I kept thinking about, what would it have been like if I had like a core of four friends growing up, like riding around in our bikes and then creating worlds for ourselves and doing all this stuff. What would it have been like growing up in the 80s? You know what I mean? Because the thing is, one thing I had to recognize, I remember watching it, was that these guys, they would just go out all day. On their bikes. If you think about Lucas's parents and all the stuff that they go through in the thing, he literally would leave his house in the morning, go to his friends, and they would go and have all these adventures and they'll come back.
Oh my God.
And I'm thinking like there were no phones. They had walkie-talkies. And whatnot, but they were creative enough to just enjoy that time.
That's childhood.
And like, I remember, like, I did go out and ride my bike and stuff, but I never really had, I wasn't, my where I lived, I wasn't near my friends in that sense. So I had
like a madrasa, which is like mosque school, and I had certain friends, but we'd meet, like, we'd go to madrasa every day. So after school, we'd go there and, you know, recite the Quran and learn lessons, and then we'll obviously talk to each other and have like fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I had that, but I had that from like maybe the age of 8 until like 12 or 13. And so I think I had that, but I feel so sorry for like the kids now who like,
They don't leave their house.
They're on like social media, and not that that's bad, but like just physical interaction.
It's just changed. I mean, because
maybe they have fun. They do have fun
because I mean, like, if you think, like, I look at my cousin and he has like, he's gaming.
Yeah.
And like, the thing is,
I was online talking to his cousin in Coventry, and they're chatting to each other and playing games. Yeah, that's fun.
Like, he's gaming, but also like, I mean, recently I was actually surprised. I went to the house and I was like, I was coming in and I was like, yo, what's up? And then he's busting out, he's leaving, he's going out with his friends, his friend pull up and he's going out. I'm like, right, he's growing up.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, a lot of young people, they are very tuned in to like their gaming, or they're very niche in what they like and what they expect. And
some do play out.
Like, I think that's what I'm saying. That not that much has changed, but there's more elements to childhood that comes with it.
Like, what do you want to experience? Yeah. What kind of childhood do you want to have?
Yeah, I do think about it. And I recognize that I basically spent a lot of my time, I was reading, I was writing growing up, and I was just like, but a lot of my friends weren't near me. So I spent a lot of time at home.
Same.
Every so often, and if we did go out, it was planned. It was like, oh, let's go to the cinema. Okay, we're going to go to Harrow Town Centre and we're going to just go to the cinema, watch it, and then we got to come back or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was never...
Go out for a day.
We're going to go out for a day, here's some money, come back by 5 p.m. Yeah. That's what, it was never that sort of thing. It was like, everything was planned.
But even like summer holidays. But the thing is, I had that in the summer holiday, I would say.
Yeah.
But for a very small period of time, and then I grew up, and then as a girl, the boys were allowed to go out, and as a girl, it's like, oh no, you have to stay in.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I hate about my childhood, though, in terms of, I was very gendered.
Mm.
And not, I mean, I knew I was a girl, but it's just that all of these expectations, like after a while, I couldn't play out.
Yeah.
And I was like, excuse me, but Christina and Gemma are outside playing.
Yeah.
And I want to play with them.
Yeah.
Back in the day, like, young boys who I used to like be friends with around my area, and when I used to live in Leyton, like, they used to lock on my door and be like, is Rafe allowed to play out? And then my aunt and uncle would be like, yes or no, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'd be like listening, like, oh, and I'll plan it, like, can you tell them?
My parents, like, you know what I mean? That never happened to me because I was too far away from their particular, like, for example, if my friends, like, that's the thing.
Didn't you have that? People knock, like, your neighbours knocking on your door and be like, is Ray or Alex allowed to play out?
I don't know. They never, because the thing is, like, it was even weird. And this is what made me.
You never played Knockdown Ginger in the flats?
That's the thing. I used to knock
on people's doors like crazy.
I never lived in a flat.
Yeah.
But also, if I was to do that, I'd have to go to where my friends were.
Okay.
And they all lived in an area.
You were a suburban boy.
Yeah, that means
you lived on Wisteria Lane.
So they I'd have to go down there to see what they're up to.
Yeah.
And they would actually be like,
you have to get to the end.
Yeah. Like, it wasn't even, but like, they would go there. And if they wanted to play Knockdown Ginger or whatever, or ride their bikes out, they'd do that. I would literally have to ride my bike to them. None of them would come to me.
Oh, babes.
And when I look at it, I was like, that's actually really deep because, like, just
ain't nobody coming to you.
Because, like, my area, like, we have, and I was thinking about it, I went for a walk the other day, and like, my area is so vast. Like, there's so much land, like, there's so much hills, there's parks, there's so much around where I am. Like,
this is the sound of music.
It's actually crazy, like, and I'll show you a picture in a minute. But, like, it was actually bizarre. And, yeah, watching Stranger Things really kind of made me think about it. And I was like, this is just crazy. And
I should have grown up in the early noughties. Oh, my God, man. I have to remember
that I had my cousins as well. Like,
yeah.
I had... Like, you know what I mean? If I was playing outside with my cousin in the garden, or we were riding somewhere, like, you know what I mean? I didn't necessarily think about my friends like that until I got to secondary school. And then it was kind of like, oh, I want to hang out with them, but I live far away. Sort of thing. Like,
secondary school, I was gendered, so I wasn't allowed to, but primary school?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I had two best friends, Gemma and Christina. They were like my neighbours, and Christina was Gemma's cousin.
Yeah.
And then this boy called Patrick, who literally was like a friend of me, because one day he'll bully me or just like take the piss, and then the other day we'll be mates.
Yeah.
And I remember the day when she's like, no, Rafa can't play out. I was like, wow, it was really sad. But no, childhood is amazing. But, like, it was fun, and I can't wait to watch.
And that's what happens when you watch it, you'll see what I mean about, like,
that nostalgia.
But those are the things I'm watching. I want to watch Dark Money.
Is that on Netflix?
That's on BBC iPlayer.
Yeah.
That looks like a fantastic piece of writing, but also it's quite dark in that I think the story revolves around a child star. I think he's mixed race or fully black, I don't know what. But he's a Hollywood star. And he comes back from his, like, from filming and whatnot, but then they find out that he's been molested by one of the producers or the director or whatever, the filmmaker. Yeah. And then the family gets paid off. And I think it's the kind of the story around that sort of stuff. So apparently, it's quite good. So I'm gonna try and have that, but you might need a strong stomach to watch it. I think I'm gonna see whether I want to watch something like that.
Mm.
Also, there's this really weird show on Netflix called Family Reunion. And it's got Tia Mowry from Sister Sister.
Oh, God.
It's got Loretta Devine in it. This is filmed in front of a live audience kind of stuff. God. And it's actually so corny. There are so many things that are happening in it. And you're just like, this is hella weird. But there are some funny bits in it. Yeah. Like, there are bits that made me chuckle. But because once you realise and recognise that it's so corny and it's so, like, it's so cheesy, and it's so, like, you just like, all right, cool because that's how they kind of used to be. They used to be like Good Times and all those shows and Different Strokes and all that.
I can't wait to have kids,
really,
fully. I think
when you watch that, it's actually like, if you just want to pass time, you know what I mean, if you just want to have something on,
I actually need, like, for example, this week, like, I've had so many busy weekends. I can't wait to have a weekend where I sit down and just, like, sit in front of my television and just watch stuff beginning to end.
Yep.
A girl is tired.
Girl is tired.
But yeah, so that's us this week.
Yeah.
Catch us next week.
Catch us next week.
On another episode of Mostly Lit. I'm off to Marseille this week.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. I'm going to be living my best Southern France life.
Enjoy.
Are the racists.
Enjoy, enjoy, enjoy.
And the Islamophobes.
Make sure that you get your tickets to our
live show
on September 12th, 2019, 7 p.m. We're going to be at King's Place. Go to kingsplace.co.uk for the tickets. It's going to be a very good show. Make sure that you come down and get some tickets.
And we've been telling you that this is the one that you need to go to.
This is the one that you need to go to.
All the other ones, listen, this is the one.
Yeah, just make sure that you come to this one. So big
announcement.
Yeah, so make sure that you... Yeah, make sure that you come down and check it out. Make sure you get the tickets. And I think that's it from me this week and from this one.
From this one, you know.
You know, she's living her best life. She's fine.
Thank you for, you know, broadcasting. I really appreciate it.
I'm out here twisted.
Yeah, Ray is living her best life. She's fine.
Ray is
living her best life and she is very fine. Thank you very much.
You know, hot girl, hot boy summers, guys, live your best lives.
We're all in it.
Yeah.
Today is like a really beautiful day, considering I was very worried that this weather was not going to turn around. But today has actually been a lovely day.
Nice. Yeah. Really nice. But anyway, guys, catch you up next week and take it easy.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.